HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Israel steps up its ground operations in the Gaza Strip. CBS's Raimi Innocencio is in Tel Aviv and explains Israel Defense Forces are going after Hamas's network of tunnels underneath Gaza.
The biggest challenge for Israel's Defense Forces is going to be the vast labyrinth of tunnels underneath Gaza. By some estimates, more than 300 miles of tunnels are below the Gaza Strip. These aren't just tunnels. They have been described as an underground city that also houses an unknown number, hundreds, thousands of Hamas militants. Here in Israel, they call them Hamas terrorists.
On today's development, CBS's Nancy Cordes at the White House reports.
All that the White House is telling us is that the president was briefed by his key national security advisors and that he will continue to be briefed throughout the course of the weekend. They say they're obviously watching what's happening on the ground very closely and that they are in touch with their Israeli counterparts.
The UN General Assembly has approved a non-binding resolution calling for a humanitarian truce in Gaza. The U.S. did not support it. The suspect in Wednesday night's mass shootings in Lewiston, Maine, is still not in custody. Maine's Public Safety Commissioner Mike Soschuk says this is a complex investigation and search that's focused on the Androscoggin River.
Sonars and grid searches and things of that nature, that's time intensive. It's taken them a while to work through there. They want to make sure they do it right. So we're not going to finish that search this evening.
The 18 people who were killed in a bowling alley and at a bar have been identified and ranged in age from 14 to 76. The day after the city of Orlando bought the site of the former Pulse nightclub, plans for a museum have been scrapped. CBS's Peter King.
Just over 6 years ago.
In this one here, you'll have, you know, water surrounding the building.
Pulse nightclub owner Barbara Poma showed us the possible designs for a museum to honor the 49 people shot and killed there in 2016. Poma is long gone from the One Pulse Foundation she started, and now the organization has canceled museum plans. The pandemic, rising costs, and disputes with Pulse's former owners were factors.
There are indications that the United Auto Workers Union strike against GM may soon end. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert in Detroit.
No deal yet, but we understand they're getting close after a lengthy bargaining session. That session included both UAW President Sean Fain and GM CEO Mary Barra, the two people who have the ultimate authority. The union's looking to get GM to agree to the gains that they reached at Ford. That includes more job security and 25% raises.
Talks with Stellantis are ongoing. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Gillette Exergen Intimate gives guys a gentle and easy shave on there. And around there. And even under there. Don't treat your groin like junk. Respect it with Gillette Intimate. The best man.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Pay raises for district attorneys and public defenders appear to be having the desired effect. Vacancies are down since the raises went into effect July 1st. Wisconsin District Attorneys Association President Eric Tony tells Wisconsin Public Radio that morale is also better. Public defenders say much the same about retention and morale. Now, Tony says he wants lawmakers to create more prosecutor jobs to help lighten the workload. Tomorrow is Prescription Drug Takeback Day in Wisconsin. People who have old prescription drugs sitting around the medicine cabinet can bring them to one of 140 events happening around the state. There are also nearly 500 drop boxes where people can leave their old medicine anytime. Attorney General Josh Call says Wisconsin is consistently one of the national leaders in the safety effort, and it makes a difference. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Bucks begin the season with a win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks started off with an early lead, then had to battle back to get to a 118-117 win over the 76ers. The Bucks' newest member, Damian Lillard, came up with 14 points in the final 4 minutes to get the victory.
And all the way down to the very last play where I got fouled and I went to the free throw line, they inbounded it to Giannis, and I was just kind of reading him like, you know, what you want to do? And he was like, come get the ball.
NFL, the Packers play the Vikings Sunday at noon at Lambeau
Field, the Packers' Christian Watson on why the Pack have lost their last three games.
What's been, you know, detrimental for us so far is, you know, the lack of, you know, growing enough each week.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers host number 3 ranked Ohio State tomorrow night at 6:30. Head coach Luke Fickell.
Closing the gap. I think that we're always looking for those gaps in whatever it is, whether you're an individual, you're a team, you're a, you know, an offense, you're always trying to close the gap.
That's Wisconsin head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and cold tonight, a low in the mid-20s. More clouds for tomorrow, few flurries and snow showers, high only mid-30s. Sun returns in upper 30s on Sunday. Monday looks sunny with a high in the upper 30s again, then a few more flurries and snow showers Monday night and Tuesday. Currently it's 37.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
A blue rating, the previous record by 16 degrees. Heat and extreme dryness are driving an unusually high number of wildfires for mid-October in the Pacific Northwest all the way up into Canada, according to the Federal National Interagency Fire Center. Air quality in the Puget Sound has again reached unhealthy levels due to the fires.
It broke the previous record. Record by 16 degrees?
Yep.
Everything's fine. Why worry?
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, woke up early this morning, 6 a.m., to get out to the strike line here at Ingredion in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And I got to tell you, you know, freezing cold, these guys out here fighting for their jobs, fighting for their future, fighting for their kids' future. I'm sitting here with Chris Eby. He's a production worker here at Ingredion. He's been here over 30 years. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
So tell me, you know, why are we here? What's going on?
Well, I guess the simplest answer would be to say, you know, what we're witnessing is a crime. And I'm not going to talk about it in the legal sense because that's frankly boring. But what we're having here is we're having a company, Ingredion, that purchased Penford Products in 2015 and came in, has no relationship to the community and wanted to rewrite our whole contract back in 2015. And here we are, what they didn't get in 2015, they're after now. And we're talking about taking our wages backwards. They want to value our jobs actually at $3 under what we make now.
So in this economy, they want a $3 an hour. They want you to take a pay cut.
Oh, well, they tell you that they're giving you raises. It's not a pay cut. You know that they're giving you 3.5% year wages. But really what that is that's annual little payouts or bonuses. Your wages actually never increase. And then at the end of the four-year contract, there's going to be certain job positions that actually make under what we make right now.
And they expect you to take that.
They have told us, I'm part of the negotiating committee, and this is the best contract they've offered in the last 3 years.
That's kind of stunning, given the fact that, you know, I've been talking to people on the line all morning, and the stories that I hear, it's cut, cut, cut. And yet, you know, when I look at this company's fairly profitable, their CEO does pretty well. It seems like the company's okay.
Oh, yeah, let's you know, not mistake that. The company, you know, their 10K report for the end of the year, they anticipated a growth in operating income between 7 and 9% for this year. They also anticipated $7 earnings per share. Well, let's keep in mind they have 66 million shares out there. And the last report that I read, that they're ahead on their plan. They're actually beating their forecasts.
So again, this is another one of those scenarios where the people who go to work every day, they punch the clock, they make the product, the sweat, the blood, sweat, and tears to create the profit, they don't get to share in. But again, you know, we see this story plays out so frequently, and it gets frustrating. So I can see it from your perspective of, you know, we've had enough. I'm wondering when society will have enough. And, you know, I've been talking to people and say the community here has been behind you guys like 100% because I think they get it.
Yeah, you know, I think the community is. I think we're in a period now, today's day 76 of the strike, that the days of neutrality are over. You know, people around here, the community's been strong, but it's time for people to pick a side, whether it's the city council. You know, do they pick with their community members, you know, the ones that actually pay the taxes around here, support the families? It's time for people to step up, but the support around here has been wonderful. People are bringing things down the picket line. You know, they're sending checks, you know, to help support our members. Again, it's been 76 days out there, you know. So, yeah, you couldn't ask for more as far as the community. We just need some of these decision makers in the community to step up, put a little pressure on this company, because obviously it isn't about money. It's about something else.
It's got to be about power, because as I understand it, and you can help me walk through this, they're bringing scabs across the line. They're paying them an enormous sum of money. And in fact, one person told me, you know, in a couple of months they're going to pay the scabs more than what you guys were asking for in your entire contract.
Yeah, they already have. I mean, they have. You know, they're bringing in, they're paying. They're telling us that our jobs are, again, worth, what, 82% or so of what we're making.
And
you
how
know?
Do they come up with that number? I'm curious. What orifice do they pull that out of?
Yeah, it's called Indeed.com. That's what they told us. And I don't know what jobs they're looking at, you know, if they're counting McDonald's as manufacturing. However, the plants around here, they don't pay that. They pay what we pay. In fact, the individual, this is only their director of labor employee relations, this is only his second contract he's negotiated on behalf of Ingredion, but they did one in Kansas City, and they make what we make. So his valuation is just a way to blow smoke up our rear ends.
Yeah, I mean, it seems ridiculous, because, you know, in talking with some of the people on the line, they're saying, look, all the places around us pay better. We're having a hard time getting workers to come here. From what the one person said, he's been here 4 or 5 years and they've never been at full employment. They've been asking, you know, trying to get people to come to work. And people, how did he put it? That this company is kind of like the minor leagues. You go, you get your foot in the door, and then you go somewhere else to make decent money, because they've really attacked you guys over the years, haven't they?
Yes, they did. You know, like I said, I was president in 2015 of BCTGM 100G, and when they came in, they, like I said, they wanted to do a lot the same. They wanted to rewrite the whole contract. However, you know, they were going to pay us something, you know, but we filed labor charges back then, and it was last year, 2021, they stood out in the parking lot right across the street that we're sitting next to now, saying that we violated the law and we won't do it again. And they put
we promise
postings in the plant. Here we are again, you know, back at the step one, you know, less than a year later, and filed labor charges. They're doing it again. And the interesting thing is, they're proud. If you go on and look at their website, they've been now awarded one of the most ethical companies for the 8th year in a row.
And who awarded them that?
Well, you know, I pull out the sheet of paper and look, but I don't think it's really that important who awarded them, because, it, you know, the value or, you know, the accuracy of that is completely false.
A lot of times these awards come from themselves. They create little associations and little front groups and trade groups and, you know, all of these so that they can make themselves look better and feel better about the things that they do to their workers, like we're seeing here. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Chris Eby. He's a production worker here at Ingredion. They've been on strike over 70 days. Chris is a loyal employee. He's been here over 30 years, and this is the kind of treatment you see. Let me ask you, over the 30 years, how has this... What direction has this job gone? You know, I had someone tell me that years ago this was a really good, this is one of the top paying jobs in the area from what was explained to me. Is that accurate?
Yeah, our overall package when it was Penford Products was probably one of the best in the industry when you combine everything together. And when I started, you know, 30 years ago, the upper management was local. They actually were right in the building, you know, and they cared about people. And when this company grew, you grew with them, you know. Now, I'm not to say that we haven't had any labor strife. You know, in 2004, we were out 78 days, so I think we're going to beat that record here.
No, I mean, the thing that I keep hearing over and over is, you know, things were good years ago. You know, we had good relationships. Things worked out. We were paid well. And slowly, incrementally over time, they've made things worse. Because I would argue corporate greed being a huge part of this, and also just this thirst for power and control.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I mean, you know, when they come in, they didn't like BCTGM 100G. You know, I mean. That's the first time they've ever had to deal with us. We are a very strong union, 100% membership. And, you know, I think they're bent on breaking us, you know. The point you made about them having difficulty in this economy retaining employees, well, that's true. You know, you can get, you know, jobs mostly anywhere, you know. I mean, we shouldn't have to after 30 years, you know, you put in here. But... the fact of the matter is we've got companies around here that just settled contracts. You know, you're talking about 15% to 18% real wage increases for over 3 years. Yeah. You know, we're not being unfair in our ass, but this is a high inflationary period. And I'm guessing they value your dollar. If you take the 11% inflation, take what we make, that's probably how they're saying we make $3 less than what we make now if you add it all up. But they say they want to make it better for employees here, make it easier to hire.
They say.
Yeah. You know, and that's why they want to institute the, you know, the option to put a 12-hour shift schedule in, you know, so you can have more days off. The problem with that is you have no guaranteed days off. They can force you on your days off. So...
So you have no guaranteed days off. Well, explain that to me, because I think most people, you know, we've got this idea that, you know, weekends are kind of, you know, sacrosanct at some point. You know, the unions fought for the weekend, so you're saying no weekends guaranteed? You can't make any plans?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'd say sometimes I'd say what's a weekend, but, you know, we do have guaranteed days off. You know, we work 7 days and have a day off, work seven, have two. And then.
But they can call you in on your day off.
Well, right now they can't. But,
oh, it's
but,
what they want.
But that's what they want. They want a 12-hour schedule and then saying, well, you'll work these hours, however, you'll have more days off. Well, that's not true because you can't plan a day off. So if you want to take your kid and, you know, to go watch his football game, well, don't be surprised if you're told the night before that you can't go because you have to work. And overtime... it's a lot of overtime in this plant, especially with attrition and turnover. And so our overtime, you know, we worked 8 hours. You know, you might have to work 12, but now you're talking about having to work 16. And their proposal to us was, well, don't worry, we won't work you more than 14, 12-hour days in a row. I think they took it down to 11 now.
Hold on. We won't work you more than 12, 14-hour days
no.
in a row. 14 12-hour days.
Right. And no more than 14 hours a day.
That doesn't sound like that. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that. So let me ask you this. As someone who's been here 30 years and has dedicated a good portion of your life to this, what does this make you feel? I mean, yeah, I got to be honest. I think I'd be kind of angry.
Well, you know what? It makes me feel like for the first time that really, I don't know if I really want to go back, you know, depending on what this contract, you know, is going to end up. You know, I find myself actually thinking, do I apply for another job? You know, there's a lot of other people that are, you know, they're losing extra people because they're finding jobs. Now, yeah. Maybe some of them come back, but a lot of them won't. So they think they have difficulty now. I don't know what their grand plan is. You know, maybe they're going to hire these what you would call replacement workers. You know, scab. For friendly work.
The scabs. I mean, at the end of the day, you cross a man's picket line, you're a scab, and that should. I'd like to have it tattooed across their forehead so everyone knows it. But that's a whole nother discussion for another day. A rant that I'm sure I will go on very soon. So last question I've got for you, in looking at this, what ends this?
It doesn't end until the company's actually ready to negotiate. We've spent just under 30 days attempting to negotiate, some of them on Zoom. And we met 2 weeks ago, and their lead negotiator straight out said, and this is no exaggeration, we don't want a deal.
They don't want a deal. So basically, they're going to try and break the union. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what they are. They're not moving. They don't want a deal. We haven't heard from them. But that's directly coming from their head guy, Bill Stovall.
So, you know, the customers who are not thrilled, because from what I've been told, one of the paper plants that you guys feed product to had to shut down because of you know, shortages, bad quality, all of the stuff that you hear when scabs take over for qualified people like you who've been on this job 30 years. I'm sure there aren't many people here who know the job as well as you and your coworkers do. So to bring in scabs from the outside, I can't imagine the quality of your product is all that great. And the customers can't be thrilled. So I'm not seeing the upside for the company in this.
Well, you know, I think the scarier part, to be honest with you, is related to this community, because we have chemicals in there, one ethylene oxide, and it could rock and damage a good portion of downtown.
So you put somebody who doesn't know what they don't know, and the community could be at danger. I mean, it's something I didn't even think about, because you know, you think. You know, it's just kind of a labor. This is a safety dispute as well, possibly.
It is, because we have combustible dust in there. You know, we've got videos all the time of the scabs and their giant dust clouds in the air. Wow. You know, in 1919, I believe it was, this right on this site, it used to be Douglas Starch Works, and there was an explosion. All right, it took out, I believe, a couple hundred homes, killed about 43 people. Across the river there, sitting on a couch, was a young boy, and it blew him back and killed him from across the river. And for whatever they had back then, the chemicals are a lot more dangerous now. However, you know, we have people that have 30-some years experience in handling these chemicals, and we haven't had any incidents. And
yeah, because as one person told me, this is the safest plant they have, the most productive plant they have, and yet this is what they're going to do to the people who come to work every day, work hard, and make them a quality product. This is the treatment.
They say that we're the best attendance, the best quality, and the least disciplined. And if you go and look at their proposal, they want to take your days away from you, your vacation days. They want to modify FMLA when you need it, so that you have to use your vacation to it. They want to change, go from you know, a 3-page discipline policy to about a 7. And of course, then again, you know, they're saying that while we're the best plant.
Yeah, we love you here. Let us beat you some more.
That's exactly right.
That's just scary stuff. But Chris, I wish you guys the best. Anything we can do to help, let me know. One day longer, brother.
All right, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris. Gonna take a quick break here from Ingredion. Again, I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We'll be right back. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 2013. That was the day that two workers on California's Bay Area Rapid Transit, or BART as it is more commonly called, were struck and killed by a train. Christopher Shepard was a BART track engineer. Lawrence Daniels was a contract employee. Both men had years of experience working on the tracks. They were inspecting the tracks when they were hit and killed. Workers who usually operated the trains were out on strike. The Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 1555, and SEIU Local 1021 had walked off the job the day before. The strike disrupted the daily commute of 400,000 Bay Area travelers. The unions were on strike for improved wages and safer working conditions. The union wanted bulletproof glass for station agent booths for worker safety. They also asked for improved lighting in the tunnels. According to an article in Mother Jones, quote, a BART spokesman called the safety issues a smokescreen, arguing that contract negotiations were not the place to raise them. In response to the strike, BART was training a replacement worker to run the train when the tragedy occurred. The manager, who was supposed to monitor the unexperienced driver, had left the car. In addition, the National Transportation Safety Board found that BART had no way for workers on the tracks to communicate with the drivers. The family of Lawrence Daniels sued BART, which settled for $300,000. The union and BART settled the strike 2 days after the tragic deaths. The union won nearly a 16% pay raise. The union also won safety upgrades. But management won concessions on employee contributions to medical benefits and pensions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, in talking with Chris here, one of the things that jumps out at me, and we've seen this story play out time and time again. You have a small family-owned company. You have a locally owned company bought out by a big conglomerate. And the first thing that they try and do is, well, squeeze the employees for just a little more. You got to pay, got to figure out how to pay the asking price, right? Got to figure out how to make money immediately. So the easiest way is to go after the workers, go after their pensions, go after their health care, go after their wages, make them work extra days. And this seems to be the one of the stories here at this ingredient place. The fact that this was a locally owned small business and then got eaten up, gobbled up, consolidated up by this giant behemoth who, well, now they're trying to impose their will, and some little union's not going to get in their way. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like something that's happened over and over and over again? And we've gotten accustomed to it. We've gotten accustomed to the big guy, the big fish always eating the little fish and feeling helpless. Now, these workers, as I said at the beginning, these are people who are courageous. These are people who are willing to step up and say, no. These are people who feel empowered to fight back and demand better. Because after all, and this is one of those key moments, you go, their work is worth something. Their knowledge, their skill, their ability to do this job, because management's now seeing this firsthand, that it's easier just to point and say, go do something, than it is to actually go and do it. And look, in my experience, you know, I remember when I was on strike years ago, you know, management couldn't wait for the people to come back in. And look, you know, working on a dock, driving a truck, shuffling trailers around, hustling trailers around, that doesn't sound all that difficult until you try and do it. And you had these supervisors who were just open arms, thank you for coming back at the end of the strike, because they didn't want to do the job. They couldn't do the job. And that's, you know, what's interesting to me is that's kind of the learning experience that you, when you talk to people who have been through this process, they see their work has value. And this is where, you know, you ask these companies, you know, you don't want the best trained people on the job. You don't want your quality people making your product. You want to put a subpar product, a scab made product out into the market. And somehow you think that that's going to make your customers happy. And this is where This is where total community support comes in. If I'm a customer, I'm not buying this product. Now, look, I'm not in the market for any industrial grade, chemicals for corrugated box, but this is what these folks make. And industries need this stuff. And from what we're hearing, again, what we're hearing is that these companies are, you know, shutting down their production. They're rationing the product that they have because they don't know when they're going to get.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News special report. Breaking news out of Maine, where multiple law enforcement sources confirmed to CBS News that the suspect in the Lewiston, Maine mass shootings has been found dead. Authorities had been searching multiple locations for Army reservist Robert Card. 18 people died in Wednesday night shootings at a restaurant and a bowling alley. CBS's Jerika Duncan reports.
People in this community said he went to that bar before and had played cornhole. So even before that second picture went out to the public, folks who saw those initial pictures of him going into the bowling alley, going into the restaurant and bar and pointing his gun knew that face.
CBS's Laura Hafley says the investigation is still underway.
A law enforcement source tells CBS News the evidence includes a firearm that Card legally purchased. Law enforcement sources say he had access to numerous other guns, and they're tracing each shell casing found at the scenes.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Dane County judge has blocked a move by state lawmakers to remove the state's top election official. Attorney General Josh Call filed the lawsuit after the state Senate voted to remove Megan Wolf from the position. In a court filing, Republican leaders said that the vote was symbolic. While today's motion isn't the final ruling on the matter, the judge ruled that Wolf is allowed to continue serving as the state's election administrator until they make a final decision. Penalties could be on their way up for assaulting or doxing an election official in Wisconsin. A new bipartisan bill would also keep people from looking up clerks' phone numbers or addresses through public records requests. Local clerks from across the country say they're facing more and more harassment since the 2020 presidential election. If the bill becomes law, assaulting an elections clerk could mean 18 months in jail. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and cold tonight, a low in the mid-20s. More clouds for tomorrow, few flurries and snow showers, high only mid-30s. Sun returns in upper 30s on Sunday. Monday looks sunny with a high in the upper 30s again, then a few more flurries and snow showers Monday night and Tuesday. Currently it's 37.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
If anyone knows what's on tap, it's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap.
The USA Today Network. But even that reference is a deception, for the publication doesn't confide to readers that it's actually a product of SoftBank Group, a multi-billion-dollar Japanese financial consortium that owns and controls Gannett. SoftBank has no interest in Austin as a place, a community, or even as a newspaper market. Nor does it care one whit about advancing the principles of journalism. It's in the profit business, extracting maximum short-term payouts from the properties it owns. This has rapidly become the standard business model for American newspapering. Today, more than half of all daily papers in America are in the grip of just 10 of these money syndicates. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's why our local papers are dying. It's not a failure of journalism, but of absentee corporate owners plundering journalism.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Back here at the Ingredion picket line. And this is, again, another one of these moments where you listen to the stories that we're gonna talk about today. These are guys who show up every day. They come to work. They bust their behinds. And they make another big corporation wildly profitable. And in the process, what they have done is they've created an environment where now the company is saying, well, you know what? We want more out of you. We want to pay you less. We want you to do more work. We want more power and control. And I got to tell you, there's a point at which people say enough is enough. And for these guys, this has been it. And, I asked one guy, is this because of coming out of the pandemic? Is this because of we're seeing all of the strikes going on? He's like, no, we were at the end of the road long before this. And here to share some thoughts on where things are and where things are going, I've asked Ryan Hockey to come talk with us. I've asked Ryan Hookey to come talk with us. Ryan's the financial secretary here at BCTGM 100G. He's also on the negotiating committee. Been here 11 years. Ryan, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So walk me through what, again, walk me through what's going on here. I think I have a kind of a sense, but, what's going on?
So, we're on day 76. So negotiations started out, we'll say somewhat, we knew it wasn't going in a very good direction from the get-go. So we handed out all of our proposals within the first half of the first day, and they kind of spoon-fed us over the course of a week and a half. We'll say maybe a week, maybe it wasn't quite that long, but the rest of that week, their proposals, and I think it was because they just didn't want to hit us all at once because it was so bad, but each proposal that they handed us, each section of the contract got progressively worse. So
now what's interesting is we had a conversation before where you said you almost had a deal with the local people, but you get the big boys, the corporate folks coming in again, the folks who are really reaping in the profits. They kind of blew it all up, from what I understand.
Yeah, so that was their initial proposals. But later on, there was a point to where their corporate guy wasn't available, and our international rep wasn't in the house. So it was just, all local people. The HR director, the plant manager, and then the local negotiating committee was sitting down hammering out some proposals. And we came to one proposal specifically, and we were a single bullet point away from agreeing to this. It was just a matter of where to place this bullet point. And it was the end of the day, and they said, well, we'll tie this up tomorrow. We come in the next morning, the guy from corporate comes in, they had completely rewritten the proposal and blew it all up, and none of the language is anything that we agreed to, none of the placements was anything that we agreed to, and we were just kind of dumbfounded. It was like, we almost had an agreement yesterday, why are we blowing this up?
The sad reality is you hear these stories over and over again. You get the corporate titans, if you will, saying, no, this is what we really want. It's not about getting an agreement. It's not about keeping the workforce happy. It's not even really about their product anymore. It's about power and profit.
Yeah, absolutely. Say, we actually, in our last session that we sat down with them, we asked them, because they came back with some of their items were worse than they were before. And we asked them, do you think this gets us closer to a deal? And they would never answer yes or no. They basically tell you that, the short of it is, we're looking out for the company and our interests.
Yeah.
They have no interest in getting language that's better for us or that's mutual between both of us. It's we're out for what works for us.
The pendulum's on one side and no compromise. But here's the thing that gets me, and this is where I struggle with every one of these situations, Ryan. Whether it's nurses or factory workers or truck drivers, we see these stories of these companies forcing this situation,
basically taking you to the end of the road, forcing you on strike with things they know no one is ever going to agree to. And yet they will spend unlimited sums of money to bring scabs across your picket line, beg, barter, and steal their management to do the job, and poorly, I may add. And they end up losing customers, they end up losing money, they end up spending enormous sums of money. They could have just given you the contract that you had originally asked for, which, as I understand, was not outrageous, and spent a ton less and had better relations. It doesn't seem sane or rational. I don't quite understand why.
Yeah, say it doesn't make any sense to us either. Yeah, and the things that we were asking for were completely reasonable, are completely reasonable still. And you're talking about how much money these guys spend to basically avoid that. By our estimate, they've already spent on scabs, their salaried personnel to retain them into the plant with their bonuses over 8 weeks, what they would have spent on our wage increases over 4 years on their initial proposal.
Say that again, because I think that's important to understand. In 8 weeks, they've spent what they would have paid you for the entire contract. They could have solved this right from the beginning, and in 8 weeks, it would have. That is mind blowing to me.
Yeah. Say, because they're giving their salaried personnel large bonuses just to stay in the plant because the conditions that they're working in. You know, we've heard from those guys on the inside; they're miserable. But you know, money talks, and so they're showing up every day. They've had a few of their guys quit, but for the most part, they've all stayed, and it's because the money that they're getting paid, and like I said, from their additional wage proposal is basically what they have spent on their management in 4 weeks on increases.
Now, what's interesting to me is that the last time I was on strike, management tried to do the job, and they did it really poorly. They couldn't wait for us to come back because they finally figured out what it is the workforce actually does. Do you see that as something in the future, or do you see this not ending?
I guess I can't speak to that currently, but we have heard from people on the inside that they have actually shut a customer plant down from poor product they've sent out, and we're hearing from other customers, workers in other plants, customer plants, that they have been told to basically ration our product that they get in to conserve it because they're not sure if they're going to have enough or if they're not going to have any more coming in.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That point, you know, they seems like they're playing with fire with losing customers over this ordeal, which, you know, more money lost for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. And again, we're told that, you know, they're in it to feed their customers when it seems like they're only in it to feed themselves. Now, some of the stories that I've heard from people, Ryan, you know, and again, when this stuff happens, the company immediately cuts off people's health insurance because they wanted to make it as painful as possible on you guys. They cut off, you know, pay and access to, you know, all of the things that you get through employment. Healthcare being a big part of this. You know, how many people, you know, have struggles? How many people have, you know, spouses who have, you know, diabetes or disabilities or any of those things?
I'd say quite a few of our members that have struggled with the whole healthcare aspect of it. You know, so on one end you have the single guy that is just kind of elected to go without insurance, you know, taking a risk, and then there's people that day one, we got to figure out what's going on with the insurance situation because we need this. We have medications that need to come in. You know, myself personally, the first week of the strike, you know, knowing that healthcare is cut off, my wife had a medical emergency, and it was a pretty big deal. So we're sitting in our house, and it's not to the point where, you know, she's like kind of monitoring her situation. And I said, if we need to go to the hospital, we just need to go. You know, there's like, we'll figure out the insurance later. But just the fact that you have to think about that, you know, like what are we going to manage for our insurance? Instead of just saying, we have health insurance, let's go to the hospital, we're going to be fine. You know, it's just an added stress in an already stressful situation. You know, and everybody has a unique story, you know, or a lot of people have a unique story in that aspect with the health insurance. So then we go, and I'm sitting there in the emergency room with my wife, and I go, well, it's the first week ago. Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe they didn't turn it off, or maybe it's not turned off yet, and this will run through. I don't know. We hand them the card. Nope, it's not going through. It got rejected and got turned away. So, you know, a 26-hour stay in the hospital, and then we get home, and we're getting bills in the mail and we're having to make phone calls to figure out if we're going to pay the 102% of my premium for Cobra for my family plan, which is outrageous, or if we're going to put my wife on her plan. You know, just like I said, just more decisions to make during a stressful situation that is on top of a stressful situation.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is another reason that I'm totally in favor of a national healthcare system to get away from employer-based healthcare. It's situations like this, because no family should have to struggle through this. And look, I talked to a couple other people who I guess you had a guy who had an accident, broke his arm, and who knows what's going to happen to that person? Because what we know in this country, 62% of all bankruptcies are because of medical debt. And it's unforeseen circumstances like this that put people in most peril. And these companies know this. These companies know that they can twist the knife and screw you into taking things that are going to be bad for you and your family. And this is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, say this is absolutely the tactic. And we sent them a letter because technically our contract went into August 1st, with insurance coverage. It's like, look, we were employed through the 1st. We didn't even vote on our contract till after noon on August 1st, so we should have insurance coverage through the end of the month. And they say, you guys didn't perform any work on August 1st, technically, so we cut you off. So we don't have to honor your insurance.
That is just, it's maddening. But, I was talking to some other people who said, look, they took premiums for that month out of your check, and some people got screwed over with that. How did he explain it that the insurance commissioner said, well, yeah, you had health insurance for that month, but you didn't know you had it, so you paid for something that you didn't know you had. And again, it's this kind of uncertainty that these companies prey on.
Yeah, saying that whole uncertainty, and it's a gray area. Say, we technically got a check midway through August because we were just the way the payroll worked into August, so they're pulling half of our premiums out, and there's.
What could solve this?
Yeah.
What could solve this? I mean, at the end of the day, what is it that could solve this? And does the company want to solve it?
Just come to the table and with a fair deal. Say, like I said, we're not asking for the world, and we know that either side is, they're not going to get everything that they want on their contract. We know that all the asks that we're asking for, that we're not going to get, but they have to know the same thing, and there is a middle ground, but they have to be willing to sit down and actually negotiate. They can't, like I said, the pendulum can't be to the one side. There has to be compromise on their part too.
Yeah. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Ryan Hookey. He's the financial secretary here at BCTGM 100G here in Cedar Rapids. We're talking about the Ingredion strike. They've been on strike over 70 days. Ryan's been at this place 11 years. And in your 11 years, I mean, I was talking to a guy a moment ago, and he's saying, look, over the years, the job, the wages have gotten worse. The benefits have gotten worse. They took your pension away in the last contract. At what point do people just not come back? I mean, is there a possibility that a lot of these guys who are now on strike, and there's over 150 people here, right?
So our membership is, when we went to go vote, I think it was 116 members is what we have. And yeah, to speak to like how long do you stick around, it's already happening. I mean, we've already had probably no less than 10 members find other jobs, and they've indicated we're not coming back. We haven't put in our 2 weeks, but depending on what we figure out for the contract, we're not coming back. And I know there's been 25 members plus total that have found alternative employment. The longer they get into these jobs, maybe they like it better. Maybe they're not going to come back here. Maybe it's a situation, maybe they're not getting paid quite as well, but they like the culture there better. It's going to happen. It is happening. So multiple people, every week this goes on, people are getting interviews. People are sitting down with other companies and say, I like the situation over here better. I don't think I want to be part of that toxic environment anymore. I don't want to, another 4 years from now, I don't want to have to go through this again. Because we went through this in 2015 when they bought us, and we were almost in the same situation then that we were in now, and here we are now, 76 days out on strike. And so people got to think, 4 years from now, what's going to happen? Are we going to have to go through this again? Are we going to have to build up our savings going into a contract again, thinking that we're going to have to burn through it? Are we going to have to find alternatives for our medical insurance? What's going to happen? And that's the uncertainty that people it doesn't sit well with people, right? You want to come into work thinking, I put my time in, my employer is going to take care of me. And that just hasn't been the case. You know, every time we sit down at the table, like you said, the benefits are getting worse, the wages are getting worse. They're actually trying to take wages from some of our people now. So there's been pay reductions. In this environment with the inflation, even with our labor market, with the people that are finding jobs, you can throw a rock in town, you can, any one of these plants that are here in town, they're hiring. And their lack of competitiveness with this package, with their offer, it's, we're dumbfounded on.
Yeah, it almost makes no sense, because like I said earlier, they, over several years, they have not been at full employment and have been begging for people to come work for them. So making the job worse, making the conditions worse, making the wages worse and lower than the other jobs in the area, it doesn't seem like the brightest business decision. And then saying, hey, we're not going to guarantee you days off so that we can work you like dogs because you're the loyal ones who stuck around, doesn't seem like a great idea to get people to want to come work for you.
No, no, it doesn't make any sense. And the fact that going in to the contract, they were struggling with hiring and retention then. So now we have this whole situation now, 76 days out on the street, you know, people in town read the newspaper, they watch the news, they know what's going on in town, they know who's treating how employers are treating their employees. If I'm an outsider and I see what's been going on down here and I'm looking for a job, yeah, this place isn't at the top of my list.
So last line of questioning I've got for you then, because you know I look at this and you said a moment ago that locally you and the management had almost come to an agreement. What's the message for the big boys in Chicago where the home office is, the headquarters folks? What's the message for them in this? Because, you know, is it possible they're just disconnected from reality? Is it possible they want to fight? What's the message for them?
Yeah, like I said before, say we're not asking for the world. We just want their team, their side to be open to what we're asking for. You know, we want to come to mutual agreements. We want our agreement to make sense for them as much as it makes sense for us.
Right, because you want them to be profitable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they are profitable.
Yeah, we're not trying to, you know, tie their hands, but at the end of the day, we don't want to be at the mercy of, their decision making. I guess, you know, some of the language is like we want to have a say in what goes on in our work life. You know,
right.
This work life balance that they talk about. And one of the things that, you know, they're pushing is one of the proposals is the overtime language. Like right now, it's a pretty fair and balanced language for our overtime. Our members have a say on can dictate their work life throughout the week. You know, with their signups, and some of their language takes that away. You know.
Yeah, the whole thing of being on call on your day off is nonsensical to me. You got to have a day off every now and then. And, you know, we used to believe in the weekend. And if unions fought for anything, it was the right to have a weekend and spend time with your family. And that pitch of, you know, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will, evidently, you know, has gone away. We need to be fighting for that again. So that's to me is a big part of this as well.
Yeah, say in their initial proposal, we kind of chuckled. They say that we wouldn't be able to force you to work any more than 14 days in a row. And it's like, well, gee, thanks. You know, you got your salaried personnel, you know, they can't wait to get out of here at 3 o'clock on a Friday sometimes, yeah, for the weekend. But, you know, 14 days in a row for your guys that are actually out in the plant, you know, running the equipment and making the product, this is just unacceptable for us. Yeah, you know,
But then again, the mentality is that anyone can do this job. Any monkey can do this kind of work.
Yeah, say it took them the better part of a month to get the basic, you know, get the grind department running. You know, we're sitting out there watching, we're seeing the struggles that they're having. And even now, we see the stacks going. They're not running all the time.
Right.
So they say that they're running, that things are going okay, but, well, then why aren't you running all the time, you know?
Good point. But, Ryan, I appreciate the time. Appreciate the work that you guys are doing. Keep up the fight. Anything we can do to help, by all means, reach out. We'll do what we can help.
All right. Thanks again. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Going to take a quick break here. You got any questions, comments, thoughts? Want to hear it? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours. Quick break. Back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1980. In what the Chicago Sun-Times called the biggest labor management war of the last two decades, the battle for union recognition at 10 J.P. Stevens textile plants ended in victory. The Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union led the union's campaign. At the time, J.P. Stevens was the second largest textile manufacturer in the nation. The Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union's campaign targeted 10 of their southern plants. Seven of them were located in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. The company refused to recognize the union. In 1976, the AFL-CIO declared a boycott against the company. But Stevens distributed so many brands that it was difficult to make the boycott effective. The next year, the union began a new tactic, a highly organized corporate campaign. The goal was to put pressure on the banks and financial institutions that dealt with J.P. Stevens. That March, 600 individuals bought one share of stock in the company. Hundreds of representatives from union groups, religious institutions, and community organizations supporting the union attended the company's shareholder meeting in New York City. They came to directly confront management. Outside, 4,000 protesters marched in solidarity. In 1979, the struggle inspired the classic labor film Norma Rae. Sally Fields won an Oscar for her portrayal of a woman who helped bring a union to the cotton mill where she worked. The real-life Norma Rae was Crystal Lee Sutton, who was fired for her union activity. She went on to become a union organizer. The union's success at the 10 Southern plants was considered a major victory for the cause of labor. However, Stevens remained vehemently opposed to unions at their other locations. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up our visit here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, our friends here at Ingredion, the workers who have been on strike now, 77 days now, I believe it is. And, you know, the sense, look, one day longer, one day stronger. These are folks who are committed to, they're going to make their lives better one way or another. And this is... there's a lesson in this, I think. There's a lesson in this for all of us. And, you know, we all like to complain. We hear people, you know, whining about things all the time. But are you really willing to take a principle that could be harmful? You know, are you willing to stand up and take the fight to the powers to be? We talk about Main Street versus Wall Street. We talk about the working class versus the greed class. We talk about this stuff, and there's a lot of rhetoric that gets thrown around, but are you willing to do something? And in this moment, these workers are saying, look, you know, we don't have a choice. We've been backed into a corner. This greedy company has been squeezing us all this time. It's time for us to stand up and demand better. You know, I heard a couple of people saying, and it's, I guess it's one of my pet peeves. You know, someone said, we deserve better. And, you know, you can make the argument, yeah, the workers deserve better. You know, I guess you could make that argument. My mindset goes along a very different path. These people earned this. They earn the dignity. They earn the respect. They earn the part of the wealth that their labor creates. This isn't a handout scenario. This isn't a begging scenario. This is, we come to work every day. We bust our behinds. We put our blood, sweat, and tears into this product. And we should be able to support our families. We should have health security. We should have some retirement security. I mean, it's remarkable to me that we're not even talking about that stuff. Talking about just, these folks are just trying to hold on to what they have, hold on to the little bit that they've been able to keep from the years of attacks that have come at the hands of these corporations who all they want is more. It's never enough. And I keep having people say, well, you know, the workers need to compromise, Rick. And this is one of those great moments where you go, the compromise, they've been compromising for years, for decades. Every time there's an economic downturn, the company comes with hat in hand going, we need concessions. But when times are good, do they ever go, hey, we're going to share? Never. It's always give, give, give. And these workers have had it. They've had enough. And I think workers across the country are starting to get to that point to where, you know what? We've been fleeced. We've been the other F word. Enough. Enough, enough, enough. And what we know, and look, the RAND Corporation did a study that I'm sure most people have seen, that over the last 45 years, the working class of this country has just been totally fleeced to the tune of trillions of dollars of wealth redistributed from the people who get up every day and go to these jobs and work these jobs and bust their behinds while, well, our greed class, the hardest day's work they do is moving money from one pocket.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.